I'm Gab, he's Jules. There's blue skies, but it is rather nippy and cold outside. Yes, over yeah. West London. Jules, midweek football, Real Madrid giving another scare. Yeah. Manchester City win. I know you're excited about Bernardo Silva.
Oh, yes.
Chelsea get it done, although
just
stealing.
About.
Stealing.
Yeah, just
that's
about.
Thomas Tuchel's words, not mine. Napoli, crazy stuff at the end. So much you're going to do. Paris Saint-Germain, don't score. We'll talk a little bit of Ballon d'Or, too, because, hey, why not? You know, that really, really matters. But let's start with the Merseyside derby. And who better to talk to than somebody who's got a bunch of these Liverpool v. Everton games under his belt?
Yeah.
Somebody who's actually played for both clubs. Started at one, went to the other. It's Don Hutchinson. Don, I want to start with something because obviously, a lot of our audience is around the world, and I say this with the utmost of respect. Everton's heyday, or most recent heyday, let's say, was in the 1980s. Yeah. I know many Everton fans who tell me, well, you know, had it not been for the European ban, we would be Manchester United right now. We would have won everything and whatever, right? Don't laugh. But this, I know that the cliche is that derbies are different. But every time I watch the Merseyside derby, every time I see those first 10, 15 minutes, no matter who the managers are, all of a sudden, it's like the game is being played on fast forward. I know there's other derbies which are just as intense, more intense or whatever. Can you just tell me a little bit about this? Why is it like that? And please don't just say it's the atmosphere, because there's great atmosphere everywhere.
Yeah. No, it's the fact that, Gab, when you play and you work on Merseyside, it's very unusual. You know, I've played in London derbies, I've played in Tyneside derbies, and up in Newcastle, it's black and white. You're in Sunderland, it's red or white. It's unusual that when you work and play in Merseyside, you could have a family of six, and three could be red and three could be blue. So it's completely different. There's still a lot of hatred, which makes for a special atmosphere. But I was speaking to Michael Owen last night, and Michael Owen's quite placid. And he even was saying last night before the game, you get carried away in this atmosphere because it's the build-up. You know, as soon as the last game is finished, straight away you're on fast-forward and you're looking forward to the Merseyside derby. And for whatever reason, you just get lost in the first 5, 10, 15 minutes of the game and you run around like an absolute lunatic because you know that's what the fans want. And they want to see that passion and they want to see tackles going in because the game's got a reputation over the years of a million yellow cards and a million red cards. And then you just get carried away until the game sort of calms down a little bit. But the first 15, as you said, is unbelievably frantic.
The iconic picture of this, and look it up on the internet, it is worth your time, is the start of one of these Merseyside derbies, I think, in the early 90s or late 80s, is Steve McMahon and Peter Reid going for a ball. It's just, I mean, it is pretty wild stuff.
The problem for Everton, if you should start like this, and then you find yourself one or two go down, it's finished.
Well, we'll get to Everton later.
Sometimes more control from the beginning is not a bad idea.
And you would think Rafa would know that, given he's got no problem with control. But again, maybe even he can't stop it. But let's talk Liverpool, because, again, I'm running out of superlatives. I know they lost to West Ham, and I know that was a particular game. But I don't understand how they keep playing at this pace with this level of control, Don. Obviously, they came out, they went 4-1, Jota scored an incredible goal. I'm just wondering, physically, how do they do that? How do they manage to hold up like this when other teams, City, Chelsea, rotate heavily in midweek? We've seen teams in Serie A do it. We see a lot of people do this. And yet, they just seem to keep going.
Yeah, I think the mental side of it is more important than the physical side of it. Because if you tell players, oh, you're in the red zone, you might need a rest, and you start telling people like Sadio Mane and Mo Salah, right, we might need to rest you for one or two games because you're on the edge, I think mentally they start feeling a little bit tired. I think it goes all the way back to Bill Shankly's philosophy. You know, never tell players that they're tired. And Mo Salah's an interesting one because, you know, they won 4-0 at the beginning against Southampton, which could have been 8. They won 4-0 last night. And he's played every single minute, Mo Salah. Jurgen Klopp's never took him off. And I wonder if Jurgen Klopp's got these players who are obviously elite players and got them to physical sort of peakness, if you like, and they're at the very top of their game. I think they are that fit now. He's just saying, no problem, carry on, you can play 90 minutes. It goes against the grain because everything we know is, you know, as fans that watch the game and guys that have played the game think that at some point they're going to need a rest. Now, maybe Champions League might be the way forward to rest one or two, but Premier League-wise, it's really unusual when you're looking at the Liverpool side that are dominating and winning the last three games 4-0 that Mo Salah's not been taken off.
Yeah, he's played every single second. of every single game in the Premier League this season, which is incredible, especially with the game that he has. But I think rotating in the Champions League, which they did last week, and they will do, I think, again against Milan, which you will be happy with next week, I think helps a lot. But I just think that fitness-wise, they've gone back to the level of 2 years ago. Last year was a nightmare season in terms of fitness.
Injuries.
Not just injuries, but also, I think, fitness for players. But now they're back to those kind of levels. And when they're that fit, no one can match them in terms of fitness, I think, and rhythm and intensity.
Don, one other thing. I got to talk about Jordan Henderson, because you talk about effort, intensity, so on. He's older now as well. Over the last couple months, we've seen him do things with the ball that are just about quality. And again, I know, obviously, you know, he is a technical player. He was a technical player going back to when he was at Sunderland. But it's not really a side of him that we've seen that often. We mostly saw the other side. Here, he had that ridiculous pass a few games ago. Again, I forget what it was, but you'll probably remember, Jules. Mm. Again, last night, so much quality on the ball. How did it happen that at 32, all of a sudden, you start doing stuff like that, which maybe you could do before, but maybe you chose not to do?
Yeah, I go back to when I was playing at Liverpool and Graeme Souness got me in after a game, and me and Graeme got on really well. And he said to me, you do too much running. He went, you need to let the game come to you. And I walked out of the meeting and Jamie Redknapp said to me, what did the gaffer say? And I went, I've got no idea what he means. And then I fast forward about 7 years and I'm standing at Upton Park and I'm in the middle of the park and I'm spraying passes everywhere. And it was almost like a light bulb above my head said, let the game come to you. And you get that with experience.
Right.
All players get to about sort of 30, 31, 32 and they think, I wish I had knew this when I was 19.
Well,
wish I had had this.
Can you imagine, Don, if you'd figured that out 7 years earlier? Players are given roles, right? Certain players who are more technical, the manager thinks is more technical, they're encouraged to take more risks because they'll pull it off more often and whatever else. And plus, if you're a younger player, you don't want to maybe give the ball away, keep your place on the side, all that stuff, and you all want to put in a lot of effort, right? So Souness is telling you, you're a big guy, you're physical, run around, put in the effort, blah, blah, blah. You're doing a lot of that. But he says, oh, look, Don can play a little. And he's trying to say, make better decisions, know when to take these chances. I get all that, right? But what I don't get is when you were younger, and I think every professional footballer was probably the most talented player on their team when they were kids growing up at some point, right?
Yep.
Almost everyone, maybe not Ben Mee, but in general, most of them, right?
Hmm.
So can you just talk a little bit about that? When did you stop being the most talented player on your team? How old were you? And when did that end? When did you say, all right, these guys are better, I don't want to take chances, I want to play within myself a little bit?
Well, it's circumstance, Gab. It's one of them. When I was making my debut for Liverpool, I sat there in the hotel the night before a game thinking, what am I going to do tomorrow? What can I do to help my team? So I was 19 and the team got released to us players the day before, and Ronnie Whelan was one side of me and Jan Mulby was the other side of me. So you've got to get your brain into gear and think, well, am I as technically good at 19 as Jan Mulby? No. Am I as good as Ronnie Whelan? No. What can I do that they can't do? I can run around, I can get stuck in, I can win the ball back, I can give it to Jan, I can give it to Ronnie. And then you fast forward a few years and then you've got more confidence, you've got more experience. Be like you guys, if you're doing this show when you're 18, 19, you wouldn't be as good as what you're doing now because you've got more confidence and experience behind you. So like any walk of life, but more so in professional sport, where you just get it. You get it when you're older. You've seen all the millions of pitches. You've made a million mistakes.
Is this something that could be... I mean, Jules, I kind of feel like if you're a coach, the reason 19-year-old Don Hutchinson is starting for Liverpool is because he's far more technical than players, than most players in his age bracket, right? So bringing him up there just to run around and defend, there's no point. You can get some other dude to do it, right? Is this a failure? Is this one of the difficulties that we see with youth coaching? That at certain clubs, I'm thinking, for example, of Leipzig being an obvious example, mm-hmm. right? Where all these guys are young, you chuck them all out there, they're all encouraged to take chances and attack. Or even Phil Foden, right? When he's in there, it's not like he just presses when he first made his debut. It's not like he just pressed and tracked back all the time. he tried difficult things, right?
Yeah.
Is this where the breakdown is?
But it depends a lot on who the manager is, how talented you really are, if what the team needs. And maybe when Don was young, they needed his legs at that time more than his technical ability, because like you said, Molby and Whelan can provide that. So he's still good enough to do a lot of things on the pitch, but what you need for him at that moment in time with that manager, in that team, with the players around him, is to do a certain job. And I think maybe later on in his career, he was in another team with another coach with more experience for himself, where the job that he had to do was just being there, controlling the game and just like dictating the pace of the game, which was not the case 10 years earlier, which I find fascinating. And to go back to Henderson, for me, the big difference is that you've got Thiago Alcantara playing now with Fabinho. And it's a very different role for Henderson if he plays with Thiago and Fabinho, or with Fabinho and Curtis Jones, or Fabinho and Wijnaldum, or Naby Keita. Exactly. And I think when you've got them two with him in that midfield three, I think he's got far more responsibility to go forward, to play those risky passes that maybe with other players in that midfield three, he thinks like, do you know what, let's not do that, this is not my job. A bit like what Don was saying about different jobs, different teams, different teammates.
It's this whole thing with the attitude to risk just fascinates me, also because of the analytical side of it. I mean, all those years of watching, you know, Francesco Totti come up, for example, I mean, I mentioned him, there's many others you can mention, and, you know, he'd have license to shoot from the halfway line to try incredible things, and nobody would care if he gave the ball away, right? At least certainly at Roma.
Yeah,
national
yeah.
team slightly different.
But then look at Johan Gourcuff, for example, with France. Incredible talent. Maybe one of the most talented yeah. players we've ever seen. Never had the career that he deserved, but at the 2010 World Cup, was so low on confidence and bullied by everybody else that he never passed the ball forward at training or in games. And like Dominic and the whole medical staff, but even the other players were like, what's going on here? Yeah. It was just, it's crazy. It's really crazy. Something in your head. And Don obviously has been there. So maybe Don, you've met players who like Gourcuff at some point in their career lost so much confidence in their own ability that they played a completely different game and so like unrisky game in a way.
I'm shocked that such a fine man manager and tactician like Raymond Domenech was unable to unlock Johan Gourcuff. Don, just moving to Liverpool, like I said, I don't want to go fanboy here because Klopp makes mistakes too and he does silly things sometimes, but I kind of feel like they've gotten almost everything right this season. And, you know, we often talk about, Jules and I often talk about how it is a three-way race in the Premier League, and maybe City probably have the highest ceiling of all because I think they have better players or more talented players.
Certainly more of 16 more, of them. Yeah.
Chelsea can improve the most.
Yeah.
But it's Liverpool who are firing on all cylinders, have been pretty much firing on all cylinders all season long.
Three goals. They score 3 goals per game in the Premier League so far, Gab. This is 3 goals per game.
I mean, if they continue like this, I think it's going to be hard even for City to keep up.
I mean, can they? I mean, that's the big question. When the AFCON arrives in a month or two's time, when they lose Mo Salah and Sadio Mane, can they? So it's important for the likes of Minamino to get minutes.
I've been arguing all season long that they're a man short in midfield, and I base this on the fact that Thiago Alcantara's injury record is appalling, and that, you know, once you get beyond, you know, Henderson, as great as he is, he's what, 32, 33 now, so you have to kind of budget for him to slow down or suffer an injury at some point. You got Curtis Jones, and then after that, I know Oxlade-Chamberlain's been doing okay, but he's got contractual issues, and you know, he's Oxlade-Chamberlain, and Naby Keita's always up and down, and Harvey Elliott's injured, and nobody's expecting
and
him to
Curtis
contribute.
Jones, you know, has an injury right now, and you know, again,
if you were the departing Michael Edwards, would you suggest, hey guys, we got a real chance to win something important, but we need an extra body in there? Can we make a small sacrifice? Can we do something? I always like to joke with Jules that they'll get Wijnaldum back on loan from Paris Saint-Germain. It doesn't happen.
Nope.
It's just a fantasy of mine. Is this something that they need to do, that they need to find the money from somewhere? Because the window of opportunity is now, and contractual situation, Salah, Mane, Firmino, it's not going to be open forever.
I think it all depends on what player fits into that. And I say squad loosely, but I mean the first 11. So what player can you go and get? Maybe Yves Bissouma, someone like that, but he's going to strengthen the squad. Liverpool have still got a good squad, as you mentioned. The guys that are either injured or on the bench trying to force their way into the first team. There's youngsters coming through. I don't really think Jurgen Klopp would want to upset the dressing room and the rhythm unless someone came along, like Thiago came along. I'm pretty sure Thiago wasn't on Liverpool's radar probably 2.5 years ago. And when you get a player like him that becomes available, if it fits the system, now you're going to have to find an industrious player. Maybe someone like Declan Rice is going to cost you an awful lot of money. But as you said, Jordan Henderson's playing out of his skin. And you go back to the Merseyside derby last year, Jordan Henderson at Kabak, those two guys were playing centre-back.
Yeah.
So it's all to do with Konate coming in and Matip and Van Dijk, which pushed the fullbacks further up the pitch. Then you've got the industry in midfield that are banging balls into Mane and Salah and Firmino and Jota. They're just a machine.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying you need to bring in a starter quality. I think you need to bring in somebody who can fill in, who can be a body. Unless maybe he's seen enough of Morton to say Morton can step up. Maybe he thinks Oxlade-Chamberlain can do it. Maybe he thinks when Keita gets hurt. But
just I think
he's got. But this viewed from the outside, though, I think that is perhaps potentially a shortcoming given what we know of the injury records and whatnot.
So you would get a midfielder ahead of another forward who would do a good job when Mane and Salah are away, which could 6 weeks or even 8 weeks.
Instead of
being stuck with Jota, Firmino, we're not sure about fitness. Jota, Origi, and Minamino. You would not rather go and get someone better than those guys to play forwards and get a midfielder instead.
I'd go for a midfielder because midfielder you have a pathway. I think first of all, there's more of a pathway to playing because if you get a striker, unless you're going to break the bank, the striker is going to look at the front three and be like, "Oh, look, I'm number five." If you get a young, promising midfielder, you can say, "All right, Fabinho's better than I am, but Henderson's older, Thiago's older, Oxlade-Chamberlain is leaving, Keita's always injured, and nobody seems to like him."
Yeah,
I can work my way in.
Maybe
they'd
plan to go for Neuhaus or Hoffman, who are out of contract, I think, in the summer, and instead you move it for 6 months, you pay $10 or $15 million, and then he's yours. And I think they could probably do that.
Just a thought. Now let's turn to Everton. Like, people know on the show we focus on. I say it's the nicest possible way. We focus on the big box office clubs, especially. That's why you hear us talking about Real Madrid and Barcelona and Manchester United so much at the top. No disrespect to Everton. Historically, they certainly are on a par with those clubs. Mm-hmm. They haven't been for a long time. Just want to get that out of the way. But I do want to talk about Everton a little bit because I think their journey is an interesting one. I went back to what I said before where people said, had it not been for Heysel, that team... was so good. It knocked us out of our stride. We're winning things in Europe, blah, blah, blah. When so much of the game is about money. And the reality, Don, is Merseyside, it's not a wealthy part of the world. You've got the Irish Sea in two directions. You've got Manchester 30 miles away with two small clubs called United and City. The catchment area is what it is. And you've got Liverpool there as well.
Of course.
So from a growth perspective, from an investment perspective, it is more difficult for Everton to grow just because of money than it would be for a London club, than to make the leap, for example, that Chelsea made 25 years ago.
They can do that Spurs, though. I think Tottenham is a right example to try to follow more than Chelsea.
And there's a lot more money in North London than there is in Merseyside.
Yeah, but still, I think... with the money they've invested, the new stadium coming, the training grounds, but you need to find a Pochettino type of manager at Everton, not changing every year because you go for Silva and you go for Carlo. I mean, Carlo, they lost Carlo, which was, they would have kept him. He decided to leave. And Benitez, who, by the way, if he finishes the season, will not be there next season because clearly we see the limits and the fact that he's not good enough as much as we like him. But you can't just keep doing that. You need a good sporting director, and Don, for example, doesn't really think that's the case right now. So there's a lot of things that you need to be able to grow, not just the money from your owners.
But I think Jules is right. Don, your thoughts on this? I mean...
Yeah, I think when you look at the size of the club at Everton, I think Evertonians will tell you, Gav. I mean, they're not trying to chase down Liverpool or Man City and win the league. They want to see progression. They want to see structure at the football club. And the teams that you can follow, which doesn't seem a million miles away, is the job that David Moyes is doing at West Ham or what Brendan Rodgers is doing at Leicester. you know, why can't Everton be in that bracket where you're trying to get into the top six? You know, the hierarchy, and you talk about money, the hierarchy at Everton over the last few years has spent close to $500 million. But Marcel Brands is the guy that's coming under pressure, and rightly so, because the signings haven't been good enough. And the side that was put out last night, it was a stark realisation, really, and it's quite brutal. But actually, you try and paint a picture before the game, oh, Merseyside derby, Everton could maybe nick something if they're on it, and Liverpool are just off it. Everton are miles away from Liverpool.
All right.
So the realisation was, before the game, they were going to get battered.
I mean, this is the thing. I said, when Carlo came in, and as you know, we're biased pro Carlo.
Completely.
But I said, this is weird to me because it's a completely different project. It is about building. And then they go and they sign James and Allen. Allen is a phenomenal player, I think. But he's older. These are players who are there to win now. And they go to Everton and they, you know, they realize, we're not going to win straight away. We're not building. James realizes, I'm not building anything here, right? When the young players do come through and develop, I'm going to be too old. And they look at the gap with the big six in terms of wages and so on. They look at, as Don mentioned, where Leicester is, and it's not going to work. And so I wonder about this. Does it go back to that? If they had spent the resources that they spent on James with the wages and whatever else, and Alan, Doucouré is a different story,
yeah,
I think.
Different, yeah.
If you had used that on younger players when Carlo came in, if Brands had said, look, Carlo, you're Carlo, whatever, but if you're going to make it work here, Ancelotti, you got to understand that you're going to make it work with kids. And we're going to try to be good 3-4 years down the line so that if you leave, we have a legacy that we can build on. Might things have been different?
Well, if that's the route you're going to go down and you're going to try and say, right, we're not going to spend a crazy amount of money because we've done that in the past and it hasn't got us anywhere, and that's going to be your philosophy, then why don't you change manager and go and get Graham Potter, because he improves players. And Graham Potter over the last, 6 to 12 months might have been, and not him, but I think fans in general would have said he could get the Tottenham job, he could have got the Arsenal job. It's only a matter of time before someone takes him. So Rafa Benitez is not going to be around forever, and I said that on match day one. I went, this will end in tears. And I didn't say that on the fact that just because he's managed Liverpool and now Everton.
Oh, you were,
I just don't
you
see
were,
the fit.
You weren't one of those, oh, it's agent Rafa type people?
No, I just thought it would end in tears, and it will do. And it's not because of red and blue, it's just because he's quite a defensive coach. He hasn't got a lot to work with. You talk about Alan being a phenomenal player. Well, he was, but he can't get around the pitch anymore. Rondon's not a great signing. Richarlison needs to up his game because he's been linked with Barcelona and Real Madrid and PSG. But actually, at the minute, he's not playing well.
Richarlison has checked out. He's left the club already. Physically, he's there, but he's not really there. I know he gave the assist to Damaré Gray on Wednesday night, but you could tell it with the body language. And that's the problem as well. Benitez is the wrong call. You've got players who wanted a move because they wanted something bigger that they didn't get. You've got bad signing. I mean, I'm sorry, Andro Stanzen is a lovely guy, but this is not good enough for what Everton should target. And then you play 4-4-2 in a game like this.
Okay, they've also had, we haven't mentioned this yet, in Rafa's defence, they've also had injuries, starting with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, obviously, who, you know, we can say, like, but it's kind of like he is Everton's Lewandowski, right?
Yeah.
Let's see how Bayern do if Leva's out, as long as DCL's out, and well, won't that be a hoot, right? So let's be fair about that.
No, true, of course.
Obviously, they've had Yerry Mina. They've had a bunch of injuries to go with it. They've also had the other guy that we're not supposed to name, who's there but not there and who's older, who I don't even know where we are legally because I think these rules, the law in this country is stupid, but you know, we all know who I'm talking about. It's a lot to take on if you're Rafa Benitez.
But you should still do better than what you're doing.
I don't think
you
should be doing better, but let's look at the whole picture, though.
Soon they're going to go down.
They're not going to go down. How can you possibly go down?
But that's what I'm saying. But something has to happen for them to stop this terrible run of form. I mean, right now, who's a worse team than them in the Premier League? Right. Norwich are better. They're playing better with Dean Smith. Watford are playing better with Claudio. Who is worse than them? Newcastle, okay, but they're worse than But who is worse than them right now, I mean?
Well, this is interesting because this is one of those situations where we're talking about stuff from the top. And with the risk of getting too granular here, I know a guy who is a big Everton fan, like a serious Everton fan, a bit of a conspiracy theorist. This guy absolutely hates Bill Kenwright. Absolutely loathes him. Thinks the man is a fraud. Thinks that he goes and he professes his love for the club, but in reality thinks he's been involved with a whole bunch of people who, you know, before Mashiri and let's face it, let's call him out, and Usmanov got involved with the club. They, you know, he had other people there who did not necessarily have the club's best interest at heart, and Kenwright looked the other way because he liked being in charge. Obviously, we saw Kenwright getting abused by Everton fans last night.
Yeah.
Kenwright is not a wealthy man. He said so himself. You know, he's the, well, he's not wealthy.
We're not sure.
He doesn't have hundreds of millions.
No.
Believe me, he really does not.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has to rely on other people. What's your take on this? I mean, is it all on Mashir? I mean, the fans' frustration, this is an educated fan base. Is this going to boil over?
They are very intelligent fans, but I think they're barking up the wrong tree if they want to get hold of Bill Kenwright. I was fortunate enough, guys, to captain Everton under Bill Kenwright, and I can tell you now, he's a massive, massive, huge Everton fan. You know, as I said before, the club and the hierarchy have spent a lot of money, but the sporting director, Marcel Brands, what's he doing? Now, what signings is he sanctioning? I would love to have been a fly on the wall in the room when Ancelotti got up and left for Real Madrid. And the conversation would have been between Farhad Moshiri and Bill Kenwright, where do we go? And I was hearing from good sources that Bill Kenwright wanted Roberto Martinez back and Moshiri wanted Rafa Benitez in charge. So there's been a little bit of a split there for the first time. But to stick it on Bill Kenwright's door, I think, and I respect Everton fans, I truly do, but honestly, in my humble opinion, as you said, Bill Kenwright hasn't got the funds to try and back Everton. Why wouldn't you, if you're an Everton fan, why would you have this conspiracy theory where you want to take the club down or you want to take the club into bad positions or get relegated? He wants to see his team win the league and win cup competitions.
It's been going on for, as you know, for 15, 20 years, this distrust of Bill Kenwright by a certain group of Everton fans. I genuinely don't know enough about it from the outside to have an opinion on this. Don, you're much more involved. My last point on this, you mentioned Marcel Brands. Is it this summer? I mean, Jules has said Rafa's not back next year, come what may. You're pretty
There's
sure
no
of that,
way.
Right?
There's no way.
Is the way forward, does it have to start with a new director of football? But also, could I also submit that it's great that Marcel Brands is director of football, but
the pressure's on Marcel Brands now. So if Rafa does leave in the summer, what's his plan?
No. So what I wanted to chuck in there, Don.
Yeah.
It's great that you have a director of football.
Yeah.
But you've also, the last two managers you've brought in have been very high profile managers who can say, I want James because I like James. And you, as director of football, have to go and get them James, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing with Rafa. Rafa probably has much more say over their signings this summer than, because he's a veteran, respected guy, comes with a big ego, than most managers would have. And you know me. I'm always saying, director of football, sporting director, has to come first. He's the boss. He lays out the vision.
Yeah.
And then the manager falls in line. And if you keep hiring these guys and pay them a ton of money and they're big name successful managers, they might well be going in a different direction, right?
I might be a little bit naive when it comes to a sporting director and the role that they do and the job that they do, but I think they've got one of the cushiest roles in football. Now, they employ a manager because what they think, and they hear the vision from the manager in the meeting, then the manager doesn't produce. Then he sacks the manager, then it's his responsibility to get another one. How about choosing the right manager and going for longevity? That's why I keep mentioning Graham Potter. Mm. You go to Graham Potter now and you say to Graham Potter, right, you're going to have 4 years at this football club. And it doesn't matter if we finish fourth bottom, but we want an identity. We want to see what you're going to do, improving young players, getting them closer to the first team without spending hundreds of millions. I mean, in all fairness to Rafa, what chance has he got when their budget in the summer was 1.75 million? I mean, that's teams in the championship spend more than that.
All right. Don, I think those are great points. Mm-hmm. I also want to say, I take your point about the director of football, but you mentioned before that he's in there, he's helping select the manager. And if he's in a room with Bill Kenwright and Farhad Moshiri, and one of them wants Rafa Benitez, the other one thinks that Roberto Martinez might walk out on Belgium before the Euros or just after the Euros, shortly before the World Cup, when he's being linked to the Barcelona job to go to, then I'm saying, like, if I'm Marcel Brands, I throw my hands in the air and say, what kind of Muppet show is this?
Yeah.
Live in the real world, gentlemen.
Let me tell you now, he's not exactly pulling up any trees. Roberto Martinez, isn't he, with the golden generation of Belgium?
Well, that's fine, but if he wins the World Cup in Qatar, it's a different story, or if he comes
close. He ain't winning the World Cup.
Exactly. No, just quickly, Everton host Arsenal Arsenal on Monday night, I think it is, in a toxic atmosphere because of the derby and everything. Then I think it's away at Palace, away at Chelsea, and then home to Leicester. Those four games, man, considering they haven't won in eight and I think it's seven defeats and one draw. They've lost as many as Newcastle, by the way, this season. Those four games are so crucial. And I know we always, it's a bit of a cliche, of course it is, but...
Are they that far down the table?
They're 15th. Okay. So they're 5 points clear of the bottom three of Burnley and the rest. But they've lost as many games as Newcastle. And those four games coming up are massive.
Don, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime, guys.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Merseyside derby, Jules. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid win their game in hand against Athletic Bilbao 1-0. Kareem may be a dream, Jules, and he did score.
Kareem the dream.
Yeah, but for the second straight game, they can thank their lucky stars, and they were outplayed. It's Saint Thibaut of Courtois,
Thibaut of Courtois. Again, some huge saves, some big misses as well by...
Why don't you put Courtois up for the Ballon d'Or instead of Kareem Benzema?
Well, maybe one day, who knows? As you know, it's very difficult to win the Ballon d'Or as a goalkeeper. Only one has ever done it. But it was, I guess, in a way, I know it's the cliche again, but it's those kind of wins that take you to the title. If you're Real Madrid and Carlo Ancelotti, because you're second best, you're beaten in a lot of parts in this game. You get a lucky goal because Modric is a shot and not an assist for Karim Benzema. He's just lucky to be onside even. But it's an easily game. I think this is the most XG against them, Real Madrid, that they had all season all competition.
I think this is a game where maybe he should have gone more for fresh legs. I don't know, but it's frustrating because you had two good performances in a row. You had the Sevilla game, which I gave him a pass, and I said, well, Sevilla were actually really, really good. More than Madrid were bad. Last night, not good.
Yeah, that's right. Thomas Tuchel makes a bunch of changes and Chelsea win 2-1 at Watford. But Gav, Tuchel himself said they were lucky and they stole a win.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a bit strong.
It's a bit strong, yeah. TT. But hey, if you want to go and like dump on over yourself, go ahead. Masochism can be fun.
Yeah.
Equally, though, I think I just think it was way too many changes. Really underestimated Watford.
Six it was, yeah.
Underestimated Emmanuel Dennis. Also, Saul Loftus, was terrible, but Saul Loftus Cheek in the middle of the park, when you play a certain way, you know, and you have these two dudes in there, it's completely different. Everything changes. Like, they have better players. That's why.
I mean,
that's
Saul, two starts in the Premier League, twice taken off at half time. That's humiliating.
Something's going on there.
Yeah.
Juventus beat Salernitana away 2-0 with goals from Morata and Dybala.
Well done.
Juve's strike force, I think it's been a million years since they both scored in a game. Does this mean all is well?
Of course not. Yeah, it was a win. But Salernitana, they're really bad.
Really bad.
Really bad. So well done to Juve for sort of bouncing back and winning. But it would have been super crisis had they not won that game or dropped points even on the draw. So just move on to the next one. But they would be far tougher opponent than that. And sticking with Juventus, the inquiry into false accounting continues, as we mentioned on Monday's show as well. And Pletti are focusing on a mystery private contract involving Cristiano Ronaldo. What's this all about?
Okay, so I want to say a couple things here for people who view this from the outside and don't get it. In Italy, our legal system has this terrible habit that when magistrates go and inquire, they leak stuff continuously during their inquiry.
It's not just in Italy, trust me.
Yeah, but it's worse in Italy than elsewhere. So look, I don't think I can be accused ever of being a Juventus fan. But this is what they're going through, right? So they leak drips and drabs to the press. So essentially, there's a phone call between Cherubini, who's now the sporting director, the guy who's replaced Fabio Paratici effectively, but was at the club before.
Yeah, his assistant.
And this guy who's a lawyer. And in this phone call between the two of them, somebody references, and let's not forget the mysterious private contract or private letter that theoretically shouldn't exist involving Cristiano Ronaldo, right? That's a quote. Somebody referenced this in the conversation between the two of them. So the prosecutors come, they search the offices, search everywhere, and they can't find the mysterious private letter. I don't know if they were joking. I don't know if it's maybe the mysterious private letter is for his surprise birthday party and what they're going to get him.
Yeah.
We don't know. Juventus, I think, understandably, you know, they're cooperating, but they're saying, we don't know what you're talking about, and they're not releasing statements. They can't subpoena the lawyer in the conversation because he's the lawyer acting for Juve in this. So I don't quite know where this goes. If I'm Juve, I'm a bit annoyed. I kind of like, all right, let's just sort out this false accounting thing, and if something's wrong, $282 million in is what's at stake here, is what they say, you know, was generated with these with this false accounting. And let's sort this out. And did we act within the spirit of the law, the letter of the law? These leaks, I don't think, are helpful. Manchester City win 2-1 away to Aston Villa. Jules, I know you're excited by the Bernardo Silva goal. Techers, baby.
We've said it before. He's the best player in the Premier League right now with Mo Salah. Them two are way above everybody else. And that goal,
because Kevin De Bruyne is injured.
But it doesn't matter. Okay. But that goal is just incredible. Counter-attack at its best from City, and they don't often do it, certainly not like Liverpool, for example. But that one goes really quickly. Mahrez, Fernandinho, and then the ball to Gabriel Jesus on the right-hand side, and then he crosses it to Bernardo, who's got enough space to take it down, and then he's one-on-one with the keeper, and instead
he's
just
volleys. It's more fun to finish like that.
So much fun. He opens his left foot, the inside of the foot, through just under the bar, nothing that Amy Martinez can do, or any goalkeeper for that liking, for that matter.
And Villa had won two in the bounce since Steven Gerrard took over.
Yeah. And City, I think, without being fantastic and amazing, again, a lot of changes, were very professional in the way they did that job. So well done. But a lot is down to that Bernardo incredible goal. Wild stuff at the end of the Sassuolo-Napoli game, Gab, on Wednesday night as well. Does this say more about the league leaders, more about Sassuolo, who came back from 2-0 down to make it 2-2 and then had a goal disallowed from De Vrel from a foul by Berardi that you could, you know, I think there was a foul, but
I think the goal was correctly disallowed. But, you know, the goal to make it 2-2, my boy Gianmarco Ferrari, in the 89th minute.
And
before
Spalletti
that,
gets sent off. Oh, it was
Spalletti
so
much. Gets sent off. Before that, the Scamacca scoring another goal. I mean, he's
on fire.
He is absolutely on fire. I think it says more about Sassuolo, because Sassuolo are a really good team.
Yeah.
And especially playing against other big teams who open up a little bit, don't play on the counter, they can do a lot of damage. Yeah. They showed it against Milan. That front three, Sassuolo, Berardi, and Raspadori. Scamacca, Berardi, and Sassuolo. They're all Italian internationals for a reason. Mm. They're all young, or Berardi a little less so, but they're really, really good. I think that's really, really exciting. As for Napoli, let's not forget, a lot of injuries. Insigne, Fabian Ruiz went off.
But still, 2-0 up, you expect them, even away from home, you expect them to see the game out.
Yeah. Those are the old days.
I know.
And the thing about the old days is, they're the old days. Italian football's changed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Paris Saint-Germain are held at home by Nice, 0-0. Oh. And Jules, could have been worse without St. Gigio Donnarumma between the sticks.
Yeah, he made a couple of really good saves, Gab. Then Kasper Dolberg missed a huge chance and hit the post. And I was like, watching, he's like, come on, do something. Messi, I think it looked like Messi was still playing with the Ballon d'Or. So obviously it was much slower, you know, much weak. I don't know, Kylian had a bad night. It's only when Verratti came on in the second half that something a bit happened.
When you get the right number of Italian guys on the pitch to actually win something.
Yeah, but it was so frustrating. I find it so frustrating to watch. I don't know where Poch is in his mind, if he's there, if he's at United, if he's in between in the channel. I don't know, but I find it really frustrating. Milan bounced back emphatically from their setback at the weekend with a 3-0 win over Genoa. And how about that Junior Messias goal again?
Okay, but let's talk Ibra, because he opened the scoring. Ibra free kick comes up. Crisis moment. Conceded seven goals in 10th minute. Free kick. Bish, bash, bosh. Boom. Done. See ya, Ibra.
Exactly.
He came off and my boy Pietro Pellegrini came on, who I'm still really excited about.
I know.
But yeah, Junior Macias, tremendous story. Oh, told you about him before. He's the guy who spent 4 years out of football, doing construction, whatever. He's now 30 years old, and he comes back and after that goal against Atleti, does it again tonight. One of the finishes, exquisite. It's a wonderful story.
We love the stories.
Bad news for Milan, though. Simon Kjær twisting his ankle with their defensive problems and Tomori out. That is a big setback. Ralf Rangnick is officially out of self-isolation. Though he won't be in charge this evening when Manchester United face Arsenal at Old Trafford. Jules, are you excited? Social media, there's like posts of him walking around the pitch and all these people like, yes, we're so excited.
No, I am excited. I think it's great. I think it's fascinating to see how he does, how long it takes him to implement all his ideas, how quickly we will see a difference, a change in the way United are playing. Can he make Harry Maguire a good defender? All those questions. I'm going tonight to the game for French TV, and I still believe he's very much involved in the build-up of this game against Arsenal. I don't know, maybe he sent some emails, some messages, some WhatsApp, those voice notes. Hey, Mikhail, this is Ralph. I don't know, but I want to see anything different.
This is growing on me. I've highlighted all the potential issues with Rangnick and whatever else.
Yeah, we've said it.
But I like the fact that the ownership at some point eventually realized, let's get out of our freaking comfort zone.
Thank
Enough
you.
Of this, all is a legend, United DNA, blah, 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 get behind all this stuff. It was right for a while. Eventually, you have to ask yourself, are we happy?
Exactly.
Is this living up to United's legacy?
Exactly.
No. Let's try something different.
And Ralph might not be the answer, but at least they tried.
Exactly.
Good on that. Inter beat Spezia 2-0. As both teams make a bunch of changes, Gab, they continue to tick along and stay in that three-way title race.
We were talking about fatigue before. Inter, I think that they made six changes. They had like four of their back six out, or four of their central defenders out.
But
it continues. And Gagliardini, guy pops up. Gagliardini. When he was very young.
I was like, come on.
When he was very young, Gagliardini
was
called, Italy's answer to Steven Gerrard.
I know, but then he moved to Inter, and that really slowed down the career.
Mikel Arteta says Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang hasn't lost his scoring touch, but seemed to suggest he needs to continue working hard off the ball. Jules, with Eddie Nketiah and Alexandre Lacazette going out of contract in June, it's a given they're getting a new striker, right?
Yeah.
Any ideas, recommendations? What would your wish list be? Your realistic wish list.
It's not just so much mine. I think they like Dusan Vlahovic a lot, and I don't know if it's doable financially with Fiorentina, with all the contract negotiation or lack of them even.
I don't think it's Fiorentina that's the problem there. I think the problem is his agent.
Yeah, and maybe Vlahovic wants a bigger club already than Arsenal. You know, I respect that. I think Alexander Isak is another one that Arsenal really like. Again, I think there's a release clause there, but would he want to go to Arsenal? Or would you want to go to something bigger straight from Real Sociedad? I don't know, but certainly they will have to make all that scouting that they did really well in the summer with the likes of Tomiyasu and Benoit and all of that work again to try to find the right striker for them and for what Arteta wants him to do, because he can talk as much as he wants from Aubameyang's point of view. Aubameyang is doing a lot of things that he's not really comfortable with right now, but that's what Arteta is asking him to do. So go and find the right profile, whoever that is. Gab, I know you're a massive fan of Mohamed Aboutrika as a player, one of the greatest African players, I think we both agree. As a pundit, he made headlines on Sunday on Bein Sport.
Yeah, so Aboutrika, the player, no argument.
I agree.
I don't know if it's still there, but I used to be cited on his own Wikipedia page because I'd said that he was the greatest player never to have played in Europe and South America.
Yeah.
And I think that may well still be true.
Yeah.
So on Sunday, he was on Bein Sport, which is a Qatari broadcaster, broadcast throughout the Middle East, wanted to give a lot of money to the Premier League. Obviously, Qatar hosting the 2022 World Cup. There's a lot of concerns about LGBTQ rights in that country. Bein Sport has run a whole bunch of stuff around the Premier League's Rainbow Laces campaign. They've had LGBTQ pundits on. They really tried to kind of emphasize this and kind of try to follow the Premier League's message of inclusivity, the rainbow flags and all that stuff. Now, you can say that they're doing this because they want to put Qatar in a good light or whatever else. But at the same time, we have Qatar people reminding us that, LGBTQ folks are welcome here, but no public displays of affection. Mm. And that's obviously angered some people as well. The thing about Aboutrika is, Aboutrika's on, he wasn't on to talk about that.
No,
he's on to talk about football. And then he kind of goes off script. It's almost like the movie Network, where the guy says, I'm mad as hell, and he starts talking about his thing. And he starts saying about how they shouldn't be following the Premier League's Rainbow Laces campaign.
No,
they shouldn't be promoting LGBTQ things. It's against his view. Now, he's entitled to his view, right? No question about it. It's not a weird view, in my opinion, sadly. It's not it's not an unusual view in that many people feel the way he does. In my opinion, that's completely wrong, but people are entitled to it. However, he's not entitled to his own platform. He doesn't own beIN Sport.
No.
beIN Sport...
It's the wrong place.
beIN Sport put him on air so that he can talk about football. And he goes off script. They've issued a statement. I think they're embarrassed by this. And I think he's going to be reprimanded. Mm. Antonio Conte's Spurs kick off in a few hours, but they'll do so without Christian Romero, who won't be back until January or February. Jules, he hasn't played much. He cost a ton of money. He got injured on international duty. How annoyed must Conte be now?
I think not just Conte. I think the fans, the club, all his teammates. He's been outstanding when I saw him play against United. He was the only really good one from Spurs, to be fair. He's had injuries, COVID, going away on international duty when the club didn't really allow him to. It's a real shame because he should be one of the leaders, and instead he's not. Roma lose 1-0 to Bologna, and a very grumpy Mourinho suggests that Zaniolo should leave Serie A. What is he talking about? Well, you're Zaniolo. You can't leave.
It's not my Zaniolo. He's Mourinho's Zaniolo too now as well. But
yeah,
his point, like, when I say, okay, deflect blame, let's give you another talking
of course,
point.
Yeah,
after a defeat. He basically says that Zaniolo gets kicked too much by defenders and he should go to a less physical league, maybe the Premier League. I don't know. Lille beat Rennes 2-1. A bit of relief for our pal Gorvenek, Jules, but still mid-table.
Yeah, still mid-table. So Rennes were on fire. 10 wins, 3 draws in the last 13 and beaten. I think best team around the 5 top leagues, qualifying Europe, etc., etc.
Best record, perhaps, rather than best.
Yeah, sorry, best record.
No.
Best record, that's what I meant. And Lille literally blew them away. And it's one of the things, Gab, that... Lille are so good in those big games. Even when they go to the Parc des Princes, they lost, but they should not have lost that game. In the Champions League, we saw them winning at Sevilla. We saw them again winning against Salzburg, Rennes. And then they're sort of like rubbish games against rubbish teams. They're just not there. And I'm like, is it the manager's fault for not getting them motivated for those kind of smaller teams? Is it the players who think they're too good for and they can just... hardly turn up and still win. I don't know, but it's quite fascinating, to be fair. They were excellent on Wednesday at Rennes, and they deserve completely to win. Renato Sanchez was fantastic.
PSG have such a big gap at the top. It feels like there's nobody who's kind of overachieving to go and actually challenge them, who can close the gap. And
yeah, I mean, Marseille is second, but yeah. No, it's a shame that Lille can't be more consistent, to be fair. Gab, the European Union's Council of Sports Minister passed a resolution supporting UEFA's governance model and rejecting close competitions like the Super League. Is this just hot air, or do you think it's relevant?
Well, on the one hand, it's hot air because... Yeah, it's both. It often happens, politicians, right?
Yeah.
Because this isn't binding, it doesn't mean anything. You know, they're not the court that is going to decide the Super League soup that's bought by Real Madrid, Juventus, and Barcelona. However, that court, as I've said this before, is a very political court, right? They do kind of based on what is our culture. It's an antitrust lawsuit, essentially, and they have to take the common good whichever way they interpret it.
Yeah.
And if they're continue getting this strong message from politicians that, hey, nobody wants a closed system or even a semi-open system because Florentino would say system's not closed because five of the 20 clubs can, you know, qualify. I think this is relevant. And I think it shows you, I mean, I learned from this not because I follow the Council of Sports Ministers of the Union. I learned about it because UEFA put out a press release.
Yeah.
So they're very keen to send this message out. But you could also read this as that they're concerned. But obviously, this decision is going to be one of the biggest decisions to influence world football.
Yeah,
no question about it. When it comes, if it comes. As COVID infections increase, the Bundesliga is grappling with new regional restrictions on the number of fans at each match, including this weekend's Klassiker between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern München. Jules, see what I did there?
Yeah.
I'm going all Derek Ray. Jules, what will the impact be?
Well, we've seen already restriction in stadiums capacity and the fans allowed to be there. You could have no fans. Well, you certainly have no fans in Champions League games next week, and maybe even for the Klassiker by the time the game comes. So it's, as we said, it's probably the right thing to do, of course, because there's a new wave and the new variant and all of that. It's damaging for the clubs financially, you know, to lose all the get revenues that they are going to lose if that lasts one game, two game, three game, however long. It's one. And you know what? I would be surprised if that doesn't extend to other countries. And
it is pretty regardless. It is pretty remarkable to me how Europe is really not that big a place, right? We live in England. We go to games. The stadiums are full. Nobody's wearing a mask. There's no station. And the case rates here for months have been higher than they are in Germany now. That's what I find remarkable.
Atalanta make it 4 wins in a row in Serie A, beating Venezia 4-0 and pulling 6 points clear in 4th place. Gab, hat-trick by Pasalic, by the way, one of those games. They are relentless when they're in that kind of form.
Right now they're in a machine where there's cogs in a machine. They come in, they go out.
There are players missing. I mean, they're slowly coming back, but for a long time, they're still...
They're rotating. They rotated at the weekend. They rotated in this game. You know, they rotated against Juve. It reminds me a little bit, obviously, there are different layers here, where the collective, it's so much about the collective that the individuals, other than perhaps Iličić in certain games, maybe don't matter as much. It reminds me a little bit
Manchester City. Yeah, I knew you were going to say
bit,
that.
Okay, Jules, time to check in on our pal Peter Bosch. The adventures of Peter and Leon. They lost at home to Stade Reims.
Yeah, they did against Reims. And it's not just that they lost. You could lose a game and be amazing and still lose.
Like, you'd still be Peter Bosch, though.
Yeah, still be Peter Bosch. And that was not good. That was not good at all. They lost in the last minute. Young Hugo Ekitike, who's, by the way, an amazing, promising talent. But it was dire from Leon.
What about the packet?
Not to do with the ball. He made weird calls, substitutions after waiting long after Reims scored first, taking Toko Ekambi out when he's been the best player. I mean, it made no sense. They don't know what to do with the ball. The structure is poor, and it's just one step up at times, and you see, okay, yeah, you see what, and then two step back because that yesterday was just like mash. It was,
well, they have much better players than their results. I mean, I look at this and this should be one of the top three squads.
Of course
squads,
they should. Easily. Right? Easily. They have a squad to compete with PSG. 100%.
Maybe not compete.
No, they do. They do. They only play Europa League. So they could, I don't know. But I think he's in big trouble and he has to be very careful. Arsene Wenger and FIFA announced that they would provide free analytics and statistical support to smaller countries, Gab, who would not otherwise been able to afford it. I know you like your data. This is a good thing to do. This is really cool.
Yeah, I believe it. Obviously, you need data and you need smart guys to be able to
you need to
interpret
it. You need to teach them
coaches,
how to use it.
Yes, and you need coaches who understand it, know what to incorporate, how to incorporate, right? You don't just run a team on data. It's better to have it than not have it.
Yeah.
It seems a bit weird. They're like setting up some company in Wales that's going to go and... From what I read in this release, though, they're getting data on internationals, so it's going to be a pretty small data set. But they're going to have Wenger. And
it's a good start.
He's helped by Steve McLaren.
Yeah.
It's a good way to evangelize. This is an important aspect of the game.
Yeah.
Everybody can decide how much they want to use it or not.
Derby County, as we know, are in serious financial difficulties, Gab. A buyer has been lined up. But the Daily Mail are reporting that the government may need to write off £20 million in debt for the deal to go through and save the club. Gab, would that make sense?
Yeah, so the argument here is that they have this guy, blanking on his name, but it's some American tech guy who wants to buy it, but they're recording the Daily Mail. He says, okay, but you guys got to give me a bit of a better deal because, you know, that 20 million, if you guys write it off, I'll invest in the club and then the club will generate revenue and then it'll go back to the tax man. However, if I still have to pay 20 million on the top, I'm not going to buy the club and then the club's going to go bust and there'll be no more revenue for the tax man. I think you can, you get a forensic accountant, you look at it. Obviously, the taxpayers have to come first, as I see it. I'm sorry, they're more important than Derby County. So you can work it out. But again, this serves as a reminder, again, of the complete lack of financial oversight that historically has been in the EFL. Yeah. And you hope that that's going to change because they're not the only club, Jules.
No, you're right. Yeah, I wanted to say big up really for Rochdale fans for fighting off a hostile takeover. Suddenly what they felt like the club would be sold to the wrong people who would not have the best of interest for Rochdale.
No, I'm interesting because we know somebody who lives in Rochdale.
Yeah,
it's that would be Mark. It's not Mark Ogden who's behind the hostile takeover of Rochdale.
No, but well done to all the Rochdale fans. This is a big community club, and that was very important to them. So well done for all the hard work that you've done.
By the way, let's get Mark Ogden down there to support them. I mean,
yeah,
Rochdale's kind of far for me to go.
He's one of the celeb fans, you know.
Exactly. Atlético Mineiro are on the verge of winning their first Brazilian league title in half a century.
Wow.
Jules, that is a powerhouse front pair that they have. Diego Costa and
oh
Hulk.
Oh, my God.
Hulky.
Can you imagine? Even now, at the advanced age, imagine facing them and all the physicality, the nastiness, all of that. It's brilliant. I want them now to go and win the Copa Libertadores next season and then go into the Club World Cup facing Chelsea or whoever they want, Zenit, if they're there. Well, they won't be there. But
they have Edu Vargas as well.
Edu Vargas, yeah. Like, that's
when he's good, he's really good. When he's not so good, he's... Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. A blow for Barcelona. I mean, this is your question. I'm not too convinced that's a blow. But anyway, Sergio Roberto, we don't like people being injured, of course. Won't be coming back until February at the earliest. How big of a deal that is for Xavi, do you think?
I feel like I'm like the biggest Sergio Roberto fan in this
you
room
are.
Right
I don't,
now.
I don't know what you see in him. I have to be honest.
Okay.
Here. Lovely guy. Loves a selfie like Ricky Pooch, but you know.
I think you need people who can execute. And when I look at this midfield, and I think, especially for this club right now, I think experience is valuable. I think Gerard Piqué and Sergio Busquets are an injury away all the time. Jordi Alba has been injured, now he's back, and who knows? I think it's important to have these guys there. This guy knows Xavi, he understands Xavi. I don't care. Listen, at right back, we had the freak show of Eric Garcia trying to play right back, right? We've had Mingueza play right back. Hey, Ronald Araujo's not really a right back. Mingueza, some people feel, isn't really
Sergio Roberto is not a right back either.
He's done it before. He's won things when he plays there. And plus in midfield as well. I'm sorry. You got Frankie de Jong. You've got Busquets. Pedri's injured. I know. Wow, Nico. Nico's a kid.
I know.
How about having another dude who can come in there?
I still take them every day ahead of Sergio Roberto. Sorry.
No love, no respect.
I know.
Okay, Jules, we left the best for the end or near the end. The Ballon d'Or. Oh, look at that. As you know, I'm not fussed. But
I know you're not.
What we've seen, a lot of folks are really, really, really annoyed by this
but
one way or the other.
Is it me or is more this year than in previous years?
You know, I feel like it's this year. I feel like it's people I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, on Twitter, this is completely blown up on social media. It's people I don't know, people I don't interact with normally, people I never hear talk about football, but they seem so bent out of shape, either because, Lewandowski should have won it, and it's some kind of Parisian mafia,
politics,
blah.
It's all about politics. Even Cristiano himself has said, fact, I deserve to win it. I was better than everybody else this year.
I think he finished, sixth this year?
Yeah, sixth,
I don't know if these people are being serious about this.
I don't know. People seem to care. Like I said to you, I like it because players care, and that's all I care about. And they all want to win it.
Let's flip a coin and care about that. I mean,
but I felt the other day I had to remind people that this was a democratic. Whether you like the way the votes are cast and the way it works. It's people from all around the world. Yeah, of course, some watch more football than others. Some know all the stats, some don't. You know, I don't know what the guy in Vietnam think or the guy in, I don't know, somewhere in, you know, South America.
Yeah, I don't want to call out countries. South America, I think, is probably fine.
But we have to respect what he thinks anyway, because for all we know, he might watch a ton of football, as many games as us, Gab. He knows all the stats and everything.
Maybe we know he doesn't actually go to games. This is he or
no,
she.
Okay. Yeah,
by the way, they're mostly he's, right?
I believe they're mostly he's.
Look, I don't know. There's 180 people around the world. Just don't compare this to the MVP award because it's not.
No, it's not at all. It's not at all. But you have to respect what Henry Winter votes for, what Pascal Ferre votes for, and all those guys.
Fine.
We have different opinions.
Somebody who's access to so much information versus somebody who's access to so little information, and they're all on the same level. To me, if you want to do it this way to be inclusive, that's fine.
Yeah.
But then don't get so like, oh, it's lost its prestige. First of all, these people bug me, right? You know, I'm not a big fan of the award, but it's lost its prestige. Go back and look at previous winners. You've had people who were injured all year winning.
Yeah.
You've had people who literally, you know, should never have won it and won it based on rep.
Yeah.
In past years, it was only European players, and then it became players based in, I mean, this whole thing, right? Just don't attack the award. Just take it for what it is.
Exactly.
And I got to say this again, remind people of the criteria. I love the fact that Paul Kennedy, at a Soccer America editor, he came out and he set out the criteria. Based on the criteria, by the way, should be Cristiano and Messi every single year. Because number one criteria.
I know.
Right? No, I'm just going to remind you, right? Individual performances and team performances. By the way, the whole team performances, when people come out and say, oh, Jorginho should have won because he won the Champions League and he won the Euros. You know where this comes from? It comes from the fact that in years past, when there was a lot less television, a lot fewer voters, a lot less information, people only tuned in for the European Cup final and the big competitions. So if you did well, people would be like, oh, I know that guy. Oh, I know who Simonsen is. Let me vote for him, right? It was as simple as that. That is why. It's not like it doesn't come down from Mount Olympus. That's one category. That's the most reasonable of the three criteria, by the way. Because the second one is talent and sportsmanship. Talent. Well, what the hell is talent? It's about what you apply your talent to, what you produce, not just simply being talented.
That's
right?
What they mean by talent. They don't mean like how many keepy-uppies can
why
you do
isn't it performance?
The one who does the most.
Come on,
it's part of it.
Well, why not give it to Zaniolo then if it's talent, right?
But
he didn't play last year, but he's still talented.
Criteria, so it can't be him.
And what about the third one? Career achievement.
I know that's the one that bugs you the most. I don't know why career achievement is in there because you judge on 1 year, not on everything they did for 15 or 20 years or 10 years or whatever their career has been so far.
You agree that,
that
Cristiano
one,
should be second or first and Messi should be the other one if it's career achievement. Yeah,
of course.
Every
and Daniel Alves should be third every year.
Where's Daniel Alves?
500 trophies in his career. But yeah, I get you. And by the way, you had a different view, or certainly a modest alternative, on what the Ballon d'Or could be if you could only win once.
Okay. I don't think this is right for the Ballon d'Or, but we have three of these big bonanza festivities every year, right? There's the UEFA Award, there's the Ballon d'Or, and there's the FIFA the Best Award, which is coming to haunt us, I think, in next month. Yeah. The last two especially are essentially identical. Yeah, you have different voters, but how about one of these awards says, hey, since it is just a celebrity popularity contest, I'm going to differentiate myself. I think this would be a good idea for FIFA to do, for example, or UEFA, should they decide to do this. Take a page out of the wisdom, I think with the wisdom that the Cricketers Almanac I discovered do this. They said, this is an award for player of the year, whatever, but you only win it once. It becomes kind of like a Hall of Fame, right? Advantage to this is that you open things up, you get new faces, new people that you can promote, you make it more democratic, make it more interesting, you make it different from the other one.
But they would not be the best player in the world then if they're seventh down because the first six already had won it. You win the Ballon d'Or, but you're the seventh best player in the world.
So what?
That's not the idea. The idea is you crown the best in the world, not the seventh best in the world.
But you're not really crowning the best in the world, are you? Because unless you want to come out and tell me that Jorginho, who finished third, is a better player than Karim Benzema or Cristiano Ronaldo. Are you prepared to just say that?
No, because my pick is Karim Benzema, Karim the Dream. But yeah.
But do you think there's anybody who would say Jorginho is a better player than Karim Benzema? So it's not about the best.
No. I see your point too.
I don't know. Just make it more interesting, man.
Yeah, I know.
And chill out.
I know.
Avram Glazer's private equity firm has bought a T20 cricket team in United Arab Emirates. Jules, this comes after he failed to buy an IPL team, also cricket, despite a £400 million bid. Now, you know more about cricket than I do, so I'll let you handle this.
I think I probably know more cricket than him, too. I mean, I'm only joking. I don't know.
More about ponytails than you do.
That's for sure. And about private equity, too. So I suspect this is an investment. I can see the IPL investment because it's obviously such a big thing. The T20 in UAE, I'm not so sure. But hey, it's one of
all the fun things you can do with the money you take out of Manchester United, right?
Exactly. A few years ago, Sead Kolasinac beat up a couple of would-be carjackers. Now, video has been made of Gabriel, the Arsenal defenders, beating up two guys who followed him home late at night and threatened him with baseball bats. Why is this with all those Arsenal badass defenders, Gab?
I don't know about it. Amazing.
Like, this, I love it.
He comes home at night with his friend, and like these two dudes,
you park the car
in the garage. They go into the garage. One of them's got a bat. I mean, I'm not surprised. Kolasinac is badass. Yeah. He's street. Gabriel evidently is too.
Yeah, he is. But he's the sweetest guy with the sweetest voice.
I don't know. I think it's.
That.
By the way, this is not normal. I don't know why it's always Arsenal guys who get Maybe because they live in the high crime area of Barnet or Belsize Park, or I think Kolasinac was in Belsize Park, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, or Hampstead, yeah. With Ozil, yeah.
But it always seems to be. I know, why always that? Yeah. All right, Jos, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday because we'll have their Classiker. How about that? Yeah. Bayern against BVB.
Yeah, that would be special.
Or BVB against Bayern, I think.
Very exciting.
And of course, plenty else. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.